Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me, as almost always, the team cap to my team Iron Man, it's Dan.
Hey, what do you know? It feels like a long time since I've done one of these, even though I can't really keep it straight anymore because I've been so busy doing the Dan thing. And I've been drafting the Superhuman Registration Act because I'm kind of, you know, all about that. So,
are you excited for the movie, by the way, or just...
It feels like April went pretty fast, so I'm looking forward to taking the kids. I'll probably take them on Tuesday or something because I always wait until the, you know, 17 pig fuckers that live in Wisconsin that go to see the damn thing, you know, or clear out. So.
A minute in, we got pig fuckers. Nice. Okay, so I'm going to go see it actually tomorrow afternoon. I'm going to take advantage of my first unfortunate week of unemployment to see it during the day while all the saps out there are working. So there you go.
May as well have a silver lining to that cloud of hopefully temporary unemployment. So
well, it's nothing but doom and dismay in Clan Candiotti lately, but.
Why I laugh at that?
I don't know why. It's really sad. Anyway, wow. So to get away from this downer of a conversation, let's bring in a few to uplift some of our spirits here. Our usual trio of terrific cronies, Vicky, Cade, and Jason. Are you guys there? You can speak at the same time. It's okay this time.
I'm here, everybody.
Hi. I'm here as well.
I like the layering of them talking over. So one time I like you guys talking over one another. Makes them sound like a big crowd.
Yeah.
And now I'm no longer missing them. No. Oh, are you guys also looking forward to the big Civil War thing? You guys got your tickets already? Are you gonna Vicky gonna see it for free again or something?
No, I actually scheduled a birthday event for when they're doing that tomorrow, so I probably won't be seeing it until like Saturday at the earliest after a cosplay like kids event.
Oh. The other guys?
If everything works out, I'll see it Friday, Saturday, and then Tuesday again.
Jesus Christ.
I may not see it until next week.
The reason this is funny is because I looked at my Facebook feed today, and apparently there are like 3 days in a row where I said I assembled, because I watched Avengers 3 days in a row because it was came out the week I quit the worst job I've ever had in my life. And so I was like, I have money. I'm going to watch Avengers every day of this shitty week because I hated that job so much.
What is that job? I need to know like immediately. Was it working for S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I don't have that job anymore.
Yeah, well, I know what it was.
No.
Shit on it.
It was a quick sign job.
Sign?
Yeah, working in sign business, making signs and stuff like that.
Oh. Huh.
Well,
fuck them. Fuck that business. May they rot.
See, that was an interesting derail.
Oh, my God. Anyway. Well, all I know is that you must be Disney's favorite consumer, because I think you saw Force Awakens like 15 times the first week as well. So
6 times, didn't pay for one.
Okay, then you're horrible and they hate you. But anyway.
Dang, that's better than me.
Well, it'll balance out when they re-release the original 3 and he only goes to Empire Strikes Back once because he hates it.
I like that.
Nice. Gotcha. Anyway, while this Civil War banter has been amusing, we should move on to... Actually, before we hit our usual trio of TV shows, I thought for a change we might want to update folks on what's been going on for the future of some of these shows, namely what's been going on in the news. Well, first, I think we should start off with, there's been a lot of news for Legends of Tomorrow that, you know, folks like Vicky and other people have been posting on Facebook and elsewhere. Seem like we ought to mention some of it on the podcast. So I've got the most recent articles in front of me. I'm basically just going to be reading these things verbatim here. For Legends of Tomorrow, the showrunner, Phil Klemmer, has pretty much stated that the series is going to keep the character lineup for the next season, pretty much. I do get the feeling they're still going to lose somebody, but it sounds like they're saying we'll largely be the same for the next season. However, they do keep telling us that they're going to be introducing a beloved superhero from the DC canon towards the end of this season, and will serve as to quote him, as a launching off point for season two. I think we've seen further rumors that it may actually be Alan Scott, Green Lantern. I don't know if that's actually confirmed. I think that still falls under the rumor category, though it might end up being true. I know Dan would be thrilled because I think you once mentioned Alan Scott as a possibility, and I think we kind of laughed it off. So, fuck us if it turns out to be right, and you're like the genius on this one, because we were like, no way, there's no way they could do Alan Scott.
Yeah, you know, a stop clock is right twice a day, so every now and then I got to get something.
So they also have now said that they're looking for casting for a couple major parts for the next season, and the way they're describing these characters. The first one is, they're looking for an actor to play a guy who grew up in the shadow of his World War II hero grandfather, and has hidden his insecurity, a la Han Solo. I don't really get that description, by the way. Until the development of superpowers enables him to live up to his family legacy. So, there's a lot of information there, which, of course, considering they can kind of change whatever they want for the show, it gives us a whole bunch of possibilities of who the heck they're talking about here. I don't know if Kate or Jason have read this or have any ideas on this one, who it might be.
I have read it and I have one idea. The character of Citizen Steel, who's a more recent character, because his grandfather was Captain Steel from the All-Star Squadron.
Holy crap, I forgot all about him. You're right.
That's a good call.
I think you're right on with that one. And I never would have remembered that character. Well done. The other character they're looking for an actress to portray a female member of an elite paramilitary team living in the 1940s. Now, they make a point of saying this African-American character is scrutinized in her time for both her gender and race, so she has worked twice as hard to be a great soldier. She blames herself for and plans to seek revenge for the death of a team member for whom she had repressed feelings. I'm kind of getting the feeling that might only be for like one specific episode, since they're talking about the whole 1940s thing. And I don't know if maybe it's a spin on a different character, and they made her, you know, African American as opposed to a different ethnicity. That's kind of what I'm thinking might be the case here. My fellow DC comic geeks, I have one idea, but I want to see if you guys check with you guys first. If you had anyone in mind, maybe you might mention her before I do.
Lady Blackhawk.
Oh shit! Did not think of Lady Blackhawk. That's actually a better choice. God damn
because
it.
they were the 40s, if I'm not mistaken. Yep. The Blackhawk Squadron was.
Yep.
Yes, they were.
Yeah, you know what? That's a better choice. Forget what I was going to say. That's much. Lady Blackhawk makes way more sense. Just
it's
like,
also kind of wish fulfillment, because one of the things I've wanted to see since they did the whole they're going to time travel was see the Blackhawks, because I like that. So I'm hoping that's what it is.
Oh, I remember when the Blackhawks appeared on, I think it was the Justice League cartoon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I got so excited. Like, I can't believe they're doing the Blackhawks on a cartoon. I can't believe it. And like maybe only like five other people on the East Coast cared. But yeah, Lady Blackhawk does make a lot more sense. I was thinking Mademoiselle Marie, but yeah, Lady Blackhawk makes more sense. So yeah, I'm going to shut up. What else does he say here? Oh, obviously he's the showrunner, so he's trying to be kind of spoiler-free here. He does make a point of saying that the second season will have a completely different premise. He refers to the finale of this season as the equivalent of a wrecking ball, laying to waste the entire dramatic structure of season one. So as they head into season two, all the building blocks of season one will have been obliterated. So effectively, the season two premiere will be an entirely new pilot with new stakes and characters. It will be from the ground up, a redesign of the show with hopefully the parts that people like best. Of course, if you've just gotten through saying that you're keeping pretty much all the characters, you still might have some problems going into that season, at least one or two. But that it's still kind of interesting, and maybe our wish fulfillment of no more Vandal Savage Hawkgirl crap might come true for next season, I'm thinking. Right, guys? Anyone? I do.
Oh, no, I agree. I agree with that. Because if you get rid of one, hopefully you get rid of both of them at the same time.
I get the feeling she's staying, though. So, yeah, whatever. Although I didn't mind her as much in the most recent episode up until the last few minutes, but we'll get to that later on in the podcast, I'm sure. One other major bit of news going on, and it had been a rumor, and it's still rumors, but it's all over the place now. So I'll just take the most recent one from one of the more reputable sites, from, you know, The Wrap. Basically, they're quoting a lot from TV Line and other sources. It's about Supergirl, and apparently that CBS is now embroiled, to quote them, in negotiation talks with Warner Brothers over the costly freshman show Supergirl. So they're saying it's coming right down to the wire. You know, I don't really need to read the entire article. Basically, the decision on Supergirl is going to happen in the next couple weeks, by the time they get to what they call the upfronts for all these shows, for all the networks. Because that's when, you know, the schedules have to be put in place, etc. Now, the word is that CBS is kind of iffy with Supergirl because it's a very expensive show to make. Apparently, it costs roughly about $3 million per episode. And the kind of ratings it gets, whereas it would be great ratings for, you know, a cable show or even, you know, a CW show, for CBS, not so good, not enough to justify the amount of money they're spending per episode. So, but since CBS does own a stake in Warner in the CW, and in fact, Les Moonves helps programs the CW lineup just as he does for CBS, they're trying to make a deal to shift Supergirl over to the CW, which is something we've been talking about as a possibility, but I think it might have been another one of those wish fulfillment things, but now it may come true. There is one major catch with this happening, other than the fact that the CW has to see if they have room to put it on in their lineup, but also, chances are, if Supergirl does shift over to the CW, it's going to come with some major budget cuts, because apparently that's still a considerably more expensive show to make than either Arrow or The Flash, or I don't know about, maybe it's as expensive as Legends of Tomorrow, I don't know. So they're probably going to have to make some trims to some of the fake flying or something, I don't know. But we're still waiting to find out. Obviously, most people assume they were going to get renewed somehow, but it's still kind of up in the air. But, I mean, I would like to see it shifted over to CW simply because it just makes more sense to be there myself.
I agree. I think, honestly, the budget cuts, the one thing I'm worried about is the amount of Martian Manhunter we would get. I feel that would be one of the biggest cuts to that show. But otherwise, I think the show would do a lot better on CW. It'd be, plus, just think of the amount of, like, 4 days out of the week if they pull it off. They have Warner Brothers DC stuff.
Yeah.
It'd probably be a better move for them.
Yeah, and you're right. I think the John Jones stuff might end up being cut as a result. I could definitely see that happening because someone's going to say, the show is Supergirl. It's not Supergirl and John Jones. So they may end up, if not writing the character out, just leaving him in his human form, generally speaking, you know, just with the red glowing eyes from time to time, perhaps.
I was going to say, I could see them moving him over to CW as well. I'm sorry if I butted in there, Dan. I didn't mean to do that. But
no, I was just going to be a dumbass, so it's okay.
I'm usually the dumbass, not you.
No, but I'm anyway, the dumbass.
Oh, let's fight about being a dumbass.
Yeah, I was just reading about this earlier today, and I think they were saying that they also might move it up to Vancouver for shooting because I guess they didn't get the tax cuts or whatever for filming in LA that they would probably be getting if they moved it to Vancouver. So
they should move it to New York.
I just think they should rename it NCIS Supergirl, and then like everybody on CBS will watch it, and then they can just do what they want.
Yeah, Mark Harmon do a crossover.
All I know is that I'm annoyed that it sounds like now there's almost no chance of getting a third season of Agent Carter. So I'm more annoyed about that.
Oh my gosh, don't even get me started.
I would rather get another season of that than this whole off again, on again, off again, on again Marvel's Most Wanted spinoff from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I don't really give a fuck about. But, you know, Agent Carter was actually, might have been the best show, superhero-based show, if you want to call it a superhero show at all, out of all of these. So it's really, it really sucks if that's going to go away. But whatever, at least we got two seasons out of it. So, and I believe we'll hear a little bit about Agent Carter at the very beginning of the Captain America Civil War movie. Spoiler! Anyway, I haven't even seen it, but I know it. All right, I guess we should start talking about the shows now. Does that make sense to everybody? Have I spent enough time on news?
Let's do this.
All right, so
yeah, let's do it.
So let's lead off, as we often like to, since we've all seen it this time around, and let's start off with The Flash. Now, the latest episode of The Flash was titled Rupture. Which was the name of the sort of villain who appears in it, but also I guess it was more analogous to what happens in the episode. There was a lot going on in this episode. We got a lot of things to talk about here, so let's try to compress this a bit. Jason, I know more than anyone else here, you seem to be chomping at the bit to talk about this. Because of your constant little notes in our private chat. So what if you could pick the first thing you want to talk about with this episode, what would it be?
I'd have to say it was the end with the what I thought was a
go to the end. That's cool. Go right to the end. That's cool.
It's a comic book style ending is what I thought of it as, where Flash explodes, I'm making quotation marks in the air, and as lightning goes through Jesse and Wally, which I think is a brilliant way to give them powers. And it doesn't seem forced or contrived. Like, it's just an accident because they were there. I love that. I loved the Ramone brothers. I like their little tiff and their how they made up. I love that, too. Mm-hmm. So, that's what I liked most about that episode.
I liked how that worked out too, but I still saw it as a little bit contrived. I mean, as soon as they locked him in that room at like 3 minutes into the episode, I mean, we all knew exactly what was going to go down by the end of it. So, I mean, maybe that's not contrived, but they definitely telegraphed what they're going to do pretty heavily.
Yeah, I'll agree. It was easy to predict, you know, that's going to be how they're going to give them powers, but I mean, I don't think it was overly contrived.
Cade? I'm waiting for you to talk.
I have no opinion on how what that choice right there. I'm just happy the thing that excited me about that was that instead of them just getting hit by the wave as everyone in the previous season did, they got hit by a wave that had been through Barry, meaning they're going to be infused with something similar to his power, if not connected to him and the Speed Force.
Right.
So, contrived or not, it was the detail of that that made that scene exciting, that there's no question they will probably have powers of speed. So, that's the thing that makes it exciting, because we wondered if they were, but now we know they probably will be speedsters just like Barry is.
And I'm really glad that I wasn't a huge fan of last week's episode, and I didn't listen to what you guys said about it because I've been so busy. But I did like the Wally stuff last week, so I'm really glad that like they took the time to build him up a little bit more before doing this, just because it'll feel a lot better that way. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm gonna say that. As far as telegraphing things, I mean, yeah, I guess you could make that comment, and it's perfectly valid. I could also say, well, then this entire year, when you have one character who they keep referring to as Jesse Quick, or and using the word quick about her, and Wally keeps talking about his need for speed, and it's like they've been telegraphing that for these characters just so those people who don't read the comic books already know, okay, there's something going on with these two. They keep dropping these words about them, which seem to imply they're going to be speedsters. If there's anyone out there who wasn't picking up on this, well, they're just not very smart, and you know, I can't help that. I mean, you're a moron, and maybe you need to be watching something that's even stupider.
And they set it up pretty well too. I mean, did make sense that they'd be trying to protect those two from Zoom, since he has captured both of them, you know, at least once. So it would make sense for them to put them in that position story-wise.
Yeah, I that's kind of what I liked about it, is because he has captured both of them at different times and threatened their lives, and they've also established that this was like the one room, the one place where people have hid or been able to protect themselves from Zoom. So I thought they really got those pieces in motion from throughout the season. So it felt kind of natural for them to get to this place, even if we knew where it had to go. Like, okay, they're going to do the particle thing, particle accelerator thing. They're in the building. Something's going to happen. It's got to happen now. But I really like that, unlike, say, certain zombie shows, okay, I understood where the plot and character kind of went together here, and we eventually got to this place, as opposed to all of a sudden a dumb decision was made in one episode and then they're there, if that makes any sense.
Right. Yeah. And also, they set something up, like, if it was any other person but Jesse and Wally in that room, you wouldn't believe they could get out. That would be bumbling. But Wally has an understanding of mechanics and things such as that, and Jesse with her 5 PhDs, these are two people you're like, if they put it together, they're getting out this room. That's not going to stop them. So even that part of it worked, because they've shown these characters are intelligent characters. They know they can do, they could solve their way out of this if they needed to.
Absolutely. I love, because it takes me back to, if they just made Wally like the annoying kid who likes to race cars, then it would have been stupid. But they showed that he was working on this whole project with engineering, and he really, you know, he's got a mind. He's just as smart as anyone. He's really talented when it comes to this stuff. So you marry that with Jesse's, you know, intellect. You know, they've made comments where it seems like she might actually be the smartest person in the room at times. It really makes sense that they'd be able to get out of that weird white braille room. So.
Yeah.
So,
well, also the fact that Harrison Wells' mind was part of the thing that built it. So, of course, his daughter would also have the understanding of how to open it, too.
Right.
Just that whole that family thing.
And I'd say the two actors definitely had a little bit of chemistry when they were stuck together there, too, which I really wasn't expecting to see, so.
Yeah, you're right. That was kind of that was very unexpected. I really enjoyed that as well. I also liked the fact that they kind of they were able to pull something off that was kind of sort of reminiscent of the actual origins of some of these characters, because I was trying to imagine, okay, you've got Wally West. The whole, if I recall, the whole thing with Wally West way back when in the 60s, whatever, is they basically, the exact same thing that happened to Barry Allen happens to Wally West, which is kind of far-fetched if you think about it. You know, it'd be like two people getting bitten by a radioactive spider, you know, or something like that. But they came up with a way where, yes, they did repeat the thing, and it affects Wally as well, and now they also solved the Jesse Quick problem, so it's not about the stupid formula, I guess. But, yeah, I was very pleased with it. I'm curious to see where they go with it, whether it's going to be a slow reveal or whether they're going to have abilities right off the bat. I mean, I have no idea, but it's kind of cool.
It definitely is exciting that we got there already. I know we wanted to kind of wait for Wally to get there, but I'm kind of happy with it getting there sooner than later.
Right, and again, just because this happened doesn't mean necessarily we're going to go right to him, you know, zipping around town. I don't think that's going to happen, but I could be totally wrong. Who knows? They're definitely not showing us any clips of that happening, for sure, because they don't want to spoil that. Can we agree that if Wally West does become a speedster, that he's not going to be called Kid Flash? That he's probably going to be.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm thinking Impulse. They might use the name Impulse for him instead. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think he'll definitely get the Impulse name. I think they'll give it to him.
Right. Because what is he, like 4 or 5 years younger than Barry? I don't think.
Yeah, it'd be a little weird. This is my sidekick, Kid Flash, the college-age kid.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of reasons why calling him Kid Flash would kind of not be a good idea. And let's just not even want to go there. It's just bad idea.
Would they call her anything then? I wouldn't think she just would, like, go by her name.
Probably just Jesse Quick.
Well, it's I guess she doesn't have to wear a mask then.
Well, technically that's her nickname, so it's not like that's her real name.
Oh yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And she's not from Earth 2. I mean, she's not from Earth 1, so it's not like she's got any family to protect from.
She's not in any database.
Yeah,
right.
So
and she could go maskless.
And I guess she technically doesn't have a doppelganger.
Nope, because the Earth One Harrison Wells died before he could have kids.
Just interesting. I haven't even thought.
Well, she must have some kind of credentials, or else she wouldn't be able to like have a job while she was out, you know, hiding.
Well, she's smart enough in our lab. She could probably doctor something up. I mean, Cisco gets into stuff all the time.
Yeah.
People do that every day, you know, here in New York, especially. let's tackle one other fun thing about this episode, or interesting thing. This was the My Three Dads episode.
Sure was.
Can we just zoom, no pun intended, right to that scene when you actually have Henry, Joe, and Harry having this kind of like, it was like a very interesting dynamic there, because each of them had a totally different point of view. And I really enjoyed watching all three of these kind of actors pinball off each other. And then, of course, Barry shows up at the end of it and saying, well, fuck all three of you, it's my decision. But obviously I'm excited to see John Wesley Shipp, a.k.a. Henry Allen, again on the show to begin with. But I kind of liked what they did there, because each of their perspectives made sense, and I understood why they would think that. Although ultimately, it's like, you've got to let them try again. But how did you guys feel about that? Should I name one of you? So we start. I'll go with. Well, Jason. Let Jason go first again.
Yeah, it was nice to see John Wesley Shipp again. Ever since he got unfortunately written out early on, you know, like episode one. Here's hoping he's back for more. In one way or another.
Mm. Yeah,
Harry always does it. He always does it.
Anyway, he got it in there.
I know. It just he has no sense of it. Anyway, go on. Just go on.
I'm just foreshadowing. I'm not going to say anything else about it.
You're telegraphing, man. Are you on the Flash writing staff now?
I feel like I could be, because that's all I do when I'm at work. I'm thinking about this goddamn show, and I should be working.
And I know he is, because I'm getting text at work that Jason pops up like, oh, okay, we're going to talk about this now.
it's his lost.
Yeah. But yeah. Go ahead. Whoever's up next.
Okay, I'll go. I love that scene that, you know, Scott, you were talking about with the three of them. And like my sister and I were kind of talking about this, but kind of like there's this, you know, kind of symbology going on with their clothing. Because, you know, Henry was in white, Wells was in all black, and then Joe was kind of in the middle with white and black.
Ooh.
That's a good pickup.
Look at that, the cosplayer noting fashions.
you picked that up, or your sister picked that up?
Well, no, we were discussing it, and she was kind of, she thought it kind of was picking it along with some of like the like D&D character alignments, but I'm like, that didn't quite work. But like I noticed the clothing then when we were talking about it.
Yeah. That's a good call by you guys.
The problem is with it, and this is probably more shows my mindset about things, I didn't see Henry Allen as providing the good side of the argument. His whole, because honestly, it's like, yeah, there's a giant terror, so let's not try to make the one thing that could possibly stop it happen again. Let the world just go into ruin. I want my son to be protected. He Jonathan Kennedy that episode, and I didn't like that. And I'm not saying Harry was right, but I am. He was right. And I felt more on Joe's probably kind of straddling the middle, but I just thought Henry Allen was just like, I don't want my son to have to do anything, except your son is the one person who can stop this. There's no one else who can even come remotely. You have to risk it.
I don't think it was more necessarily Henry was like the good, quote unquote good. It was basically Wells was like, Barry, you need to do this. We need to make this explosion so you can get your powers back. Henry was all, no, you don't want to do this. And Joe was kind of in the middle, because he saw, you know, both arguments for either decision.
Well,
I like the escalating stakes throughout the episode. that ends up showing that Wells is correct, and his is the only option in the end.
Also, Henry's perspective is different for one very clear reason. Henry is his father. So Henry's first thought and first concern is about his son's well-being, especially since he didn't get to be a father to him for most of his life. So, yeah, he's going to take the perspective, because right now there is no guarantee that this experiment wouldn't kill him. You know, he said it before that it would put him in a coma, et cetera, et cetera. There's no guarantee. And, you know, as far as they know at the end, that's kind of what happened, even though we know that's not what happened. But, you know, so that's his perspective. He's seeing it just about his son. He's not thinking about the city or the world or the universe or whatever. It's about his son. And he doesn't think his son should risk his life, you know, based on what this guy Wells says. Why should Henry even trust this guy? So I'm not saying Henry was right, but I understood his point. I understood all three of the point of views. You know, we obviously, we're agreeing with Wells mainly because we want there to be a Flash show. No matter what Wells says, that's the one we're going to agree with. But I understand Henry taking that perspective, even though at a certain point, you know, someone said, you know, if he doesn't do this, you know, Caitlin's going to die now that the whole city's going to get killed. You know, all the cops are going to be killed. He is the only one who can do it, as Cade was pointing out. But I get him saying that in that conversation. But ultimately, the decision has to be Barry's, not anyone else's. I was more questioning Barry's initial reluctance to do it. I would have thought Barry would have agreed to it a lot sooner, quite frankly.
Yeah, that did kind of come off because we had gotten to the point where it seemed almost Barry didn't see himself as anything other than being the Flash. That's how he viewed himself. That's how most of his decisions were made, based on him being Flash. So here he loses it, and here's his chance to have it back, and he's not sure he wants to do it. It seems a little like he had so much. He was too shaken by what happened that he automatically was like, "No, I don't know if I want to be Flash anymore." When this whole season, it built up to where he was the Flash. He built himself around being the Flash.
She said it's the only downside is there's too much hesitation on Barry's part to go through the accident again.
Right. No, I get that. I don't know if I agree with them doing that either. But, you know, I mean, they had to stretch it out for the episode, I guess. But in terms of the character, I would have thought he would have come to that decision on his own, you know, at the half hour, 40-minute mark, you know, as opposed to when it actually happened. Although we got the interesting moment where between him and Iris, where they finally start getting that on track to the, you know, the inevitable duo there. I'm not going to start with Jason on this one because I already feel I know what he's going to say, so I don't care. So, hey. I'm going to go with Dan. Dan, what did you think of the stuff with Iris and her confession to him and so on?
Oh, I liked how she handled it. The way Barry handled it was pretty fucking lame, though. So if were I in that position, yeah, I wouldn't have just been like, oh, okay, okay. That's, you know, yeah. It was pretty fucking lame of him, so.
Yeah, I actually agree with you.
I understand he had a lot of stuff going on and he had to, like, deal with getting, like, zapped and wasn't sure if he was going to survive it. So I get that, but he just kind of, you know, he can't, you know,
what he should have said was, you know, I'm being all wishy-washy indecisive right now, but I hear there's one thing that can help a person if they're being kind of indecisive. So maybe you can help me out a little bit, Iris. Anyway, Cade, what did you think of it?
I liked it because I think we were slowly working towards actually seeing Iris realizing she loved Barry. She was feeling very pointed in that. So it was a good thing that it came. And yeah, like Dan said, Barry's just like, Barry, what is wrong with him when it comes to women and really, he can't function. I can save the world, but I can't handle what a woman tries to tell me she likes me and wants to. It's just like, I'm gonna fall apart. And especially now, cause Iris, he's not having to hold a secret back from her anymore. She's fully in, she's there. She knows what's going on. This is probably the best supporting relationship. This is probably the best relationship he could have because she will support him as Flash. She knows he is. She won't question it. He doesn't have to hide anything. And he's like, I don't know. Stop it. Stop being Barry for a second.
It's just disappointing. It would have been really nice and refreshing if they just let him just like be happy with the moment instead of it maybe dragging it out, which they might do because this is what they do in the CW, and they'll just needlessly drag it out for several episodes until there's like some other new love interest that none of us wants to deal with. Oh, maybe they can bring Patty back. That's a good fucking idea.
I'd be down for that. I like Patty.
Yeah.
Maybe they should have her date the editor from the newspaper. That'd be kind of sweet.
I like Patty too, but I actually really like Iris as of this point. They've done a lot to make me to redeem her character and make Iris something that's enjoyable in the show. And that would it was at this point, I'm like, I want her to be with Barry. Yeah. I'm okay with this. I don't want someone else to come along and love triangle this business.
Yeah. Plus, she's fucking Iris out there.
Yeah. Vicky, what did you think about this, Vicky?
I mean, it was okay. Like you guys kind of said, I thought it was weird that Barry was just going to be like, it was like, blink, blink. Okay. I'm going to go make this decision now. it was just a little weird, but I mean, it's okay.
I do like the fact that we're all giving Barry shit for this, whereas, you know, another point of view could be like, is this really the time to be telling him this when he's got this major, you know, life or death decision? Like, oh, by the way, I might want to start dating you after all. I mean, if you're open to it. Like, yeah. Dude.
It was very bad timing on her part.
But that's life. That's life. Shit doesn't always happen when you want it to. That's why it didn't bother me, you know.
Well, the chance of the thing going really awry definitely was there. So, I mean, there was kind of her chance to get it out before it was, you know, potentially too late, which
also
seems to be.
She's had the thing with Eddie where she didn't really convey her feelings and they were on the outs and then Eddie died. I think she's seeing this. There's a chance I might lose Barry. I do want him to know how I feel about him.
Yeah, because the closest we ever got to that was, you know, erased, you know, by time travel, you know, back midway through season one, if I recall. Let's switch gears a little bit, because there's a character we haven't gotten a chance to talk much about. That would be Sisko, who kind of played another major part in this episode and stuff with his brother, who I practically almost forget about until they mention him all the time. It's like, oh yeah, the brother he doesn't get along with and all that stuff. So we got this whole storyline with him trying to reconnect with his brother, and then his brother's doppelganger shows up, who's, of course, just like Sisko, the doppelganger was an evil villain, apparently, on Earth, too. So what did you guys think of how the... Whoa. Okay. What did you guys think of... What the fuck was that? Really?
Who was exasperated there?
God damn it.
It's like the Grim Reaper walked over our graves.
Yeah. So, I think we all have said time and time again how much we've enjoyed Sisko more and more as the series has gone on, and how he can handle both the, you know, the humor as well as the emotional parts of the show. So I really kind of enjoyed this stuff a lot more than I expected to. Once again, how did you guys feel about it? Let's start with Kate. Kate, what did you think of it?
Besides the fact that when the scene started with him and his brother, I'm like, who is he talking to? And then I had to be reminded when he started referencing getting kidnapped, like, oh, that's his brother. This was good because we don't get as much Sisko as the family as we do with the other people. Like Barry, it's constant. Caitlin doesn't have anybody, but Sisko does. And it's good to be able to see that interaction with Sisko. And then apparently Sisko's like, having to tell his brother what's really going on. That's a lot of information for Sisko, who's sometimes seeming barely grasping what's going on himself, to have this happen, let alone the evil version of my brother has shown up on Earth trying to kill the both of us. That's a pretty heavy thing. And it got a good part because it got to show Sisko having a different side. He's not just witty and making jabs. He's having to have emotion between him and his brother in those scenes, and that was a good thing for his character because it's not something we always get with Sisko.
Yeah, I completely agree. This was, I think, one of my more favorite parts of the episode, just the stuff between him and his brother, just because we've seen, you know, in the past couple, you know, in past episodes, just their, the enmity between them. So it was, you know, different to see basically his brother get clued in, and he's like, oh, wow, you're actually dealing with a lot of some crazy stuff here, and they kind of reconciled a bit.
I think what was nice about it is that we got what I felt was a genuine emotional moment with them at the end of it all. And I actually thought, oh, that's actually, I believe it. It works. I actually felt, you know, I felt a little touch of sadness or poignancy with their relationship. So it kind of, that's why I thought it worked for me. More so than the villain.
Yeah, I
stuff.
Did. Yeah, I did too. That's why I said that at the top. So I that's one of my favorite moments of the episode, was when Sisko hugged him.
I didn't, because I took pretty much like no notes for this podcast. I feel like Sisko did drop a bunch of really good references in this episode, and I'm totally blanking on what any of them were. So if any of you made any note of any of his usual, I know there was a Harry Potter reference made in the show. That much I can remember, which was funny because they love.
And did he make?
Go on.
Did he make a Fringe reference? Was it?
Yeah, it was Fringe.
He did. He made a Fringe reference.
Fringe reference. Holy crap!
Which is a wonderful reference to make concerning what's going on this season.
Yeah.
The funny thing was, he makes the Fringe reference, and I guess it's Jesse or something doesn't, or someone doesn't get it. I think it's Jesse, and he's like, "Oh, I guess they don't have Fringe on your Earth." And I'm like, "Hey, you know what? I watched Fringe, and I wouldn't have gotten that reference either. So maybe it is there."
Yeah, I don't remember some vacuum being on Fringe, but I'll be watching it soon, so I guess if it comes up, I'll talk about it here.
There you go. So I did enjoy that stuff, but there's something kind of... Oh, before we get to that, let's deal with Zoom. All right, so we had some scenes with Zoom, and I like the fact that we were dealing with the whole... mask on, mask off, the voice and everything.
Yeah.
It was a little weird than zipping around with Caitlin. not the most convenient thing, but I guess not that big a deal for him. What did you guys think about how the Zoom stuff was done in this episode? Are you warming more up to it or not? Do you need more focus for what the hell he wants to do here? Or what are you thinking on that? Jason, what are your thoughts?
I think that this was the first episode where I got the gravitas of how dangerous he was when he took out all the people at the police station in the blink of an eye, save for, you know, the main cast members, you know, all the extras fall down. I thought, killing of the Killer Frost and the other villains on his Earth didn't really do much for me, but it's the fact that he was able to cross over into this world and just, you know, he decided to clean house. I keep getting the feeling that he's keeping Caitlin alive for more than just because he liked her. That's, you know, he's like something I'm thinking about.
Like he's King Kong.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling that he really needs her for something besides just to look at her.
Interesting. I can't imagine what that might be.
I think he probably could have threw her in a holding cell instead of handcuffing her to a desk, but, you know.
Yeah, that surprised me, too. That he did. Yeah.
But, she could.
But, you know, but then she... we wouldn't have the... Yeah.
I'm just glad that she was able to find a phone that didn't require a password to get into it, you know, unlike, you know, like every phone I've ever encountered. But, you know, that's fine.
Plus, it set up that great scene, and, like, every time I see the coffee shop, I just hear Scott saying, oh, CC Jitter's stupid fucking name.
Oh, it still fucking annoys me.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
I keep hoping they blow it the fuck up. Okay, so... Let's get to something here, and this a few of us can get our comic book geek on, whatever. There was a little something mentioned in this episode by Henry Allen. He makes a reference to when he hears Jay's last name for the first time, which is totally believable. There's no reason they would have said his full name to him before. But he reacts to the name Garrick. And he mentions, oh, it's just weird because that's his mother's maiden name. Now, I'm of the belief that you don't put something like that in there unless it means something, and means something rather big. So, since we've been spinning our theories, and a lot of our theory, you know, there were theories about Zoom, and now they've switched over to the Man in the Iron Mask, and within the next few minutes, I'm prepared to change my belief on who the Man in the Iron Mask is. But I wanted to hear what you guys had to say about it. So, Jason, I know this. I think this was the thing that really caught your eye and ear more than anything else, because you already did your foreshadowing earlier in the podcast. So, since I defer to you with the theories after what you've done earlier this season, so what are your thoughts as far as the Garrick name and what that means for this show, and whether that's involving the Man in the Iron Mask or anything else for this season and beyond? So I'm giving you the entire framework here to play with, so don't fucking disappoint me.
Okay, well, I'll try not to. When Henry Allen said, Garrick, you're not the only one that raised their head up. And it was like, what? What did he just say? And I actually had to stop the show, and it was one of those times where I stopped the show and rewound it just to hear it again. So it gets me thinking. Garrick is part of the Allen family tree. So, this is going to relate back to the Iron Man in the Iron Mask on Earth 2. He could be one of two people. It could be the real Jay Garrick, but the real Jay Garrick could be Henry Allen doppelganger.
Yes, yes.
Now, we know that Barry Allen exists on Earth 2. There's a Barry Allen on Earth 2. So, that Barry Allen has a father. Is that the same Henry Allen, or is it a different person? That's a question I have, and I don't know how they're going to work that out. I've done a lot of thinking about it, and that's what I come down to. I have a strong feeling that it's John Wesley Shipp in that Iron Mask.
Well, I'm also switching on that count as well. I'm believing that it's John Wesley Shipp as well, because once that Garrick thing got dropped, I was like, oh, I've been advocating making him Jay Garrick since I first heard they cast John Wesley Shipp on this show. Before I even heard he was going to be Barry Allen's father, I was like, oh, is he going to play Jay Garrick? And then it was, oh, he's Henry Allen. And then when I started realizing, oh, they may do an Earth 2 thing, oh, can he be Jay Garrick on that planet? You know, whatever. And of course, then we got, you know, the guy from, you know, Masters of Sex, like, eh, whatever. So I'm still, it's keeping hope alive for me that something I've wanted to happen since before the show premiered could actually happen, because, you know, then he'd fulfill that older character. Because Jay Garrick and Barry Allen, I always thought he was pretty much a generation older. He was old enough to be his dad, the way I always figured him anyway, pretty much. So I thought it would make perfect sense. However, and I'm thinking about you specifically, Jason, here, because we've talked about this a little bit. I got this strange, weird feeling, and I know this is one of the crazier theories out there, and I've seen it on, I just saw it on a Facebook page earlier today, and it made my mind spin. I was like, you know, oh, wow, that would really be something. Would be if the Man in the Iron Mask turns out to, yeah, it's John Wesley Shipp, but he's not Jay Garrick necessarily. He's the Flash from the 1990 TV show.
Yep.
And as you pointed out yourself, if they went through the trouble of showing us all those little glimpses when he was traveling between Earths, and we've gotten the payoffs with most things, you know, whether it be Jonah Hex or Supergirl or even the Legion Flight Ring, which we saw on a Supergirl episode, which really didn't make sense to be in there, whatever. But we also saw the John Wesley Shipp Flash. And we could have just said, oh, it's just a cute little Easter egg, just to lay it out that this is a multiverse and that even that exists somewhere. Or maybe it has a bigger meaning, or maybe they're going to end up using it because they've got the actor, you know? So I'm really loving the idea of them getting away with that. We, their audiences, would be able to figure out what the heck is going on. I don't know, but they've done such a great job of explaining things like time remnants on the show. Who knows? But I'm kind of falling in love with the idea of that happening. That's just it would be the craziest thing I can think of right now for the show.
Yeah, and not only that, don't forget we've had actors from the show show up in the current show. Oh. Mark Hamill, Amanda Pays.
Everyone but the other lab assistant scientist dude has shown up on the show, as far as I know. Oh, actually, no, he was a cop.
Yes, he was.
That's right, he was. He played a cop. So pretty much, Belzer's the only one. Belzer has not shown up, which is weird because he figured he'd actually show up as like John Munch, since he shows up on every show in TV history as John Munch. So why? I can't believe they haven't had him show up at this point. Actually, it's like, you could just
every Earth has a Detective Munch.
Yeah, because you can add to your Wikipedia. You've shown up on 19 different TV shows or something like that. You know, why not make it an even 20? But I'm really falling in love with the idea that it could be the 1995. Even though I was like, well, why would that be? Who cares? The writers and the showrunner for the show keep putting themselves out there saying, it's going to blow your mind. It's going to be the crazy. And I can't come up with something that would be crazier than that. Unless they get – the only thing that would be crazier, the only thing that could possibly be crazier than John Wesley Shipp in the Iron Mask as the 1990 Flash would be if somehow they kept a really great lid on it and it's freaking Ezra Miller. Who's going to be the Flash in the movie in a couple of years. Oh, by the way, news item, the director left that movie, so now they're looking for a new director for it. Anyway, I forgot to mention it in the news. But that's the only thing I think that could possibly be crazier, although most people watching won't recognize him anyway, so it won't mean anything to anybody. Like, I don't know what that's supposed to be. But Cade, I've kind of left you out of this. What are your thoughts on all this, or do you have different theories going with you?
I think it's far more probable it's the Flash from the 90s TV series. The only problem with the whole it's Jay Garrick, the doppelganger of Earth One Henry Allen, is because we know Barry Allen's dad is named Henry Allen. Well, we know he's an Allen, which that's his dad's name. So it would be weird if his dad's name was Jay Garrick on the other Earth, because that's just a strange thing. So the only other possibility is Jay Garrick is a cousin, because we know Flash is like Devrelation type things. But I'm still thinking you guys are right. I still think it's the whole...
Jesus. Go on.
Well, physical, like Barry and Wally used to be related. They were, it was his nephew. That's what I'm talking about. They have that. There's a relation thing as far as like, and I think even Jay Garrick was somehow related to Barry in some distant way, that type of thing. So, but I think it's the Flash from the 90s TV series. That would be an interesting thing.
Jason, you actually remembered an interesting little tidbit from the original Flash TV series we were talking earlier today, which although I think was just something they did as a cute thing back in 1990, it would be hysterical if they actually found a way to spin it into a storyline here. Do you want to say what it is?
Okay, so in the first episode of The Flash...
1990.
One of the main drives for John Wesley Shipp to become the Flash is his brother gets killed in the pilot episode. And his brother's name is... Anyone to use who? It's Jay.
Well, since I know, I don't want to say it.
It's Jay. His name is Jay. Jay Allen.
Jay Allen. That's lame. Forget
mm-hmm.
That's a mm-hmm. terrible name.
Yeah. I think can I correct you guys? Correct you on something? Wally is not Barry's nephew. It's Iris's nephew.
Well, they were... Yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
they're only related by marriage.
Still. Related.
Fight. So can I... Is it safe to say that between the three Flash fanatics from, you know, the geeky knowledge that we have... Are we all moving away from it being Teddy Sears in the mask, and now we're thinking, we're all three of us are thinking it's going to be John Wesley Shipp instead? Is that where we are right now? Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, I don't think it's a Zolomon doppelganger.
As much as I'd love to see Teddy Sears put the helmet back on and that Flash outfit back on, I think John Wilson's ship would look a whole lot better in it.
Yeah, it might fit his head more naturally than it does Teddy Sears' head, quite frankly. Plus, I do think if they... I started thinking about this further. I was like, really? If they did another, you know, take off a mask reveal and it's freaking Teddy Sears again? Like, really? Again? Why?
They have some real explaining if they pull that. If they did that, there's some definite explanation we would need.
And then there'd be another cage with another guy with a mask on, and he takes his mask off, and oh look, it's another Wells. No, just.
Does anybody have any theories as to why Zoom is keeping him alive? Exactly.
I have no clue.
Unless he has some speed that was helping him keep him alive.
Maybe.
A different kind of speed.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I've read the synopsis for the finale is a sentence. And I think that it essentially says, Zoom finally reveals his plan, and Barry does whatever he can to stop him. That's essentially the synopsis for the finale. It's like, okay, we're not really going to know Zoom's real plan until the finale. All right, that's fine. But looking forward to it, definitely. But I have no, I don't have a clue. Vicky, do you have anything to say about any of this, or are you just basking in the glow of our stupidity?
No, I'm just listening to you guys theorize.
All right. I'm thinking with all that theorizing, I'm pretty sure we're pretty much done talking about the episode. I mean, we all know that he just zipped over. He just, you know, he didn't die at the end. He's just probably in another universe or something, right? That's essentially what happened.
I think he's trapped in this. I think he's trapped in the Speed Force.
He's in the Speed Force.
In the Speed Force. Okay, that makes more sense. And he doesn't have his costume, so I guess Sisko has to whip up a new one for him because it got, you know, all blown apart. So maybe the new
that
one.
Was
one.
A,
maybe yeah, we'll get the yellow boots.
Yellow boots.
That was a great moment with Zoom picking up the remnants of that costume. And I thought to myself, that would make a great last panel for a comic.
Yes, it did have that kind of feel to it. I just wish Zoom could just leave the mask on. Just leave it on. Just let Tony Todd do the work. Just with the voice. I love him when he. I love Zoom when he's that villain, and whenever he takes off the mask, I'm like, ugh. It's like watching RoboCop. Like, no, put the helmet back on. I like you better with the helmet on. No. Anyway, all right. Are we cool with moving on to the next show, or is there anything more Flash oriented you guys wanted to mention here?
No, other than Sisko.
Oh,
and then Sisko also mentioned Princess Bride too, but that's about it.
Princess Bride, that was the other one. God damn it. Good memory.
So I want to hear you guys. What was your opinion on the whole hologram thing? I personally wasn't too keen on it.
You kidding? He got to shout out Leroy Jenkins.
Okay.
He sure did.
Pardon my ignorance, but what's that from?
It's a YouTube World of Warcraft.
Just YouTube Leroy Jenkins. You'll see it.
It's amazing. It's hilarious.
We just got nerdier.
Oh. I like the visual effects they used for the scythe, too. I thought that was pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah. The scythe was really nice. You're right about that. I actually wish Rupture had been just... I mean, I had no problem with him, but I almost wish he had been a slightly cooler villain or they got more use out of him. But because I really like that scythe. I thought that was pretty cool. I agree with you on that one. As far as the hologram thing, I didn't have a big problem with... You know what it reminded me of? It's kind of like a comic book trope where when a hero is unable to perform maybe their incapacity or whatever, that they got to do something to kind of fake it. You know, if it's Superman, then they send out Superman robots. If it's Batman, then someone else gets dressed up in his outfit and stands in for him, you know, standing on a rooftop somewhere or something. So with the Flash, they come up with a hologram zipping around. So I guess I liked it. this show is sci-fi fantasy, I guess, so I just have to just believe that they're able to do whatever they do on this show, because they're able to whip up everything in no time at all. But I liked it, but I liked the fact that they're also pointing out, you know, this ain't going to work for too long. You know, pretty soon, you know, this isn't going to be much help. But I liked it as a stopgap measure. Because what else are you going to do?
It was better than, you know, nothing, but yeah. Because, yeah, they didn't want to just leave the city kind of high and dry or whatever.
Yeah, which is why having Zoom kind of blow up the secret kind of works really well later on. Because, you know, Flash is not Green Arrow. You can't just have someone else dress up as him and do what he does, you know, because the whole speed thing. So I actually thought it was kind of an ingenious way to deal with the problem, at least for a day or two. I don't know. I never know how much time passes from episode to episode here. So, I'm still finding it weird that Wells and his daughter sleep in cots or beds next to each other. You know, I was like, really? She doesn't get to have privacy? That doesn't creep anyone else out? But, you know, again, this is a show that has, you know, Barry being in love with his, you know, semi-sister for all this time. So whatever. Anyway, so I guess we can move on now, correct?
Yes.
All right, so let's leave the Central City in the Flash, and let's get to the latest episode of Arrow. So the latest episode of Arrow was titled Genesis, and I'm going to say that I pretty much enjoy the episode. I'm really enjoying... you know what? The more Damian Dark we get, the better. Because I just like watching Neil McDonough just, you know, chew up the scenery and everything else he ever does. He just... For a show like this, he definitely livens things up, and he's kind of a breath of fresh air. But I actually liked a few other things going on in this episode. Specifically, the stuff with Ollie and Felicity going to find, I guess her name was Fortuna. I don't know if they gave, I can't remember if they gave us her full name. And I actually think she's a character from the comics. I'm just drawing a blank on who she is. But I kind of like that. Although it was driving me crazy that they kept dropping references to Constantine, like going, hey, you know what would be great? If Constantine was here. But obviously, they can't afford to get Matt Ryan to show up. I think he's on Broadway or something. But,
I was kind of wondering if that was a character that had been on Constantine, which I hadn't seen.
No.
If they had done that, that would have been kind of sweet.
That would have been cool, but no. But I really enjoyed that part of it. A lot of the characters who tend to show up on the show tend to not have much of a sense of humor. You know, outside of maybe, you know, Vixen and Constantine were fun. You know, they were good. But other people, not so much. I like the fact that there was a little bit of playfulness about her. And, you know, and she was, you know, an accomplished, what she called it? Is she a shaman? Is that what she said she was?
Yeah.
So I was about to call her a sorceress, but I guess shaman is what she says. That's good. But I kind of liked that. So that was one of the things I really enjoyed about the episodes. But, and also the interaction between Ollie and Felicity in that regard as well.
Did anyone, I remember back in earlier episodes, we were kind of making fun of the corn and we didn't know what they were doing with it. Did anybody, like, did we figure out what it was for before this episode? Because when I was watching the preview thing, or the, not the preview, the previously on Arrow stuff at the beginning, I'm like, oh, you know, the Dark says that they're using it to, you know, produce oxygen. I just realized, like, at that point, it's like, oh, they're just gonna make an underground place where people are gonna live and just, like, raise the surface. So did anybody else, like, did we talk about that before or just make fun of it because it was kind of lame?
I think we spent too much time making fun of it. We never actually treated it seriously.
Yeah, all we did was make fun. We didn't try to think about what it could be.
Yeah, but it made sense to me, like, right then, right at the beginning of the episode. So I'm just like, oh, I guess it wasn't that lame after all.
Oh, I actually really enjoyed that reveal on that. I got a big kick out of that. Part of me was like, wait, are we going under the dome here? And then I realized, oh, that's not just under the dome. I think they might be underground. You know, which I think they had they made some references to that before about having to go down all these, you know, multiple stories all the time and shit. So I really enjoyed it. So let me ask you something. I guess her boyfriend, whatever. Is he's in on this then? Is that the implication? He's in on this whole thing?
I don't think he was. I think when he got into the Ruvaeus campaign, she started giving him the vitamins because that's the pills Dark uses to drug his soldiers into obedience. So I think he started to take those and they got him under control. I think he's kind of like brainwashed. I don't think he's always part of it.
Yeah, because he seemed pretty confused as to like what the hell was going on rather than deliberately. And, you know, I didn't trust him for quite a while anyway. I thought he was a plant, but I'm not quite so sure anymore because he definitely was, I mean, just like, okay, what?
Because I thought his performance was too good to be just lying. You know, yeah. If that makes any sense. I'm not saying his performance was great, but you know what I mean. Like, I don't think he's lying. I think he generally doesn't realize this. And you're right, because that's her reaction when those vitamins spill out. I guess she's seen those drugs before as part of the Dark brainwashing or whatever the heck you guys call it. The whole Hive thing, I guess. But I really liked that little storyline that was kind of they kept peeking at during the episode, especially her noticing the sounds and it being on a loop. I really was getting a kick out of that. I was like, oh, that's very smart. I enjoyed that a lot. Let's face it. You know what really makes this episode really noteworthy? No fucking flashbacks.
Yes.
Did anyone notice?
Oh my God, there weren't.
No flashbacks. Instead, we got the closest we got to that was when we got a peek into, you know, Ollie's dark side or whatever. We got this, whatever you want to call that crap. And we get that moment of flashes of all those different things, you know, which kind of reminds me of when they touched the lightsaber in Force Awakens. Anyway, but it was at that point, I was like, hey, we're not going to get any flashbacks in this episode. All right, can we do that for the rest of the season, please? But I think that might have made this episode more enjoyable because there wasn't. Although it meant there wasn't time for me to go to the bathroom doing it because there was no flashbacks to ignore. So
I actually laughed out loud during that scene because, I mean, they're showing all these old clips, which was cool, of all these really terrible things that happened to Ollie. And then, like, one of these really, really horrible things that stuck with him was, like, Baron Samedi or whatever the fuck his name is, just, like, choking him and lifting him in the air. He's like, oh, yeah, I can see how that would, you know, you really, really give a crap about that. No.
I was hoping in that scene when Deathstroke is smacking him around and Damien Dark shows up, I really wish they had kind of gotten the actor, been able to get the actor who played Ra's al Ghul to show up just for that one moment, to have, like, so all the major bads he's ever fought should have been in that scene. I think that would have been kind of cool, like, have it be like Merlin, Deathstroke, Damien Dark, and Ra's al Ghul all kind of beating the crap out of him for like a minute there. That maybe, I mean, obviously they probably couldn't get the actor, but I think that would have been a really neat scene if they had done that.
Well, they could have gotten him since they had him for Legends of Tomorrow a couple weeks back. That's just bad planning. You could have shot that scene like a couple weeks ago.
They're different people, different shows. You can't don't go there.
same people, Scott. Come on.
I doubt that, you know, like that was I don't think that was actually Manu Bennett.
Of course it wasn't. Deathstroke. Really, Vicky? I'm sure it was Manu Bennett with a mask on and not saying anything.
That's the trick of Deathstroke. You just put the mask on. It could be anybody. You don't have to have him.
Oh my gosh. But I like the fact that even in the clips, like, okay, we don't even want to show a clip where we see his face, where we'd have to pay him more. So when they even when they show like Ollie getting like stabbed with a sword, but don't show Ra's al Ghul's face. Which I noticed that too. So anyway, what else was happening in this episode? So this was one of those episodes since we didn't have a flashback, we actually had multiple storylines that we were following. So, and obviously one of the major ones was the Diggle family storyline, as far as John and his brother. You know, I really like the character John Diggle. I like the actress who plays his wife. You know, but all I'm going to say about it is, yeah, I'm glad it's over because the brother was a decent character. Well, no, he wasn't. But even in this episode, it just felt repetitious to me. It's like, oh, he's got him. He's going to kill him. No, I can't kill him. Oh, he's got him. He's going to kill him. No, I can't kill him. Like, oh, enough. Just kill him already. So I was glad that he just finally disposed of that character. I didn't feel anything by the end of it. I don't really have much else to say about it. Did anyone really like that, or are they just happy it's done, or what?
I was glad it was finally over. Because that storyline was just... It was like everyone, how John hadn't seen it yet. Oliver was the one who saw it. Oliver told him. It's like, so now we have vindication. Oliver was right. But that just dragged and dragged and dragged. It's like, oh, no, he's going to turn him. Oh, wait, it's. I'm glad it was over. It went too long. That could have been a two-episode thing instead of how long it's dragged on.
I'll say, yeah, I agree that it was dragged on, but I'm not going to argue with how it was done, because I think just with, you know, another show that I watch, and all the bad guys get quote-unquote redeemed, I kind of enjoyed the fact that his brother stayed basically a bad guy, and he had no remorse about it whatsoever.
I suspect you're talking about Once Upon a Time, aren't you, Vicky?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I don't know why I figured that out, and I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah, it's starting to grate on me. It's like everyone has to get redeemed.
Wow, it's like it's 2014.
I enjoyed the Diggle stuff this week. I didn't think they really drug it on too much. I mean, if the end game was him killing his brother, him being tortured and it going through the same thing, trying a few last ditch attempts to fix it, or you know, halfways during the episode, I thought it made sense, and it gave Mr. Ramsey a good chance to his acting was really good, so I thought it was well done and more effective than I thought. And I was pretty fired up when he killed him, though. I was just like, okay, please, just kill this fucker. Just because, like, you know, I was ready for the character to die. I mean, that character should have got killed.
Well, let me ask you something. Did he lie to his wife later on about it, though?
Yes, because he told her he pulled the gun on him and he shot him as a self-defense thing. No, he just turned and shot him.
Yeah. Okay. I thought he did. I thought he lied.
Yeah. He did.
Yeah.
It could be argued that it was quote unquote self defense because his brother said he's never going to stop coming after him. Basically.
No, he lied.
But yeah,
could be. No, I don't know. No, he said the area he said
he reached. He
the
reached.
He described was he a reached, straight up lie.
He said he reached for my gun and I shot him. He didn't.
Yes.
He didn't reach for his
gun. Oh yeah.
He shot him.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure I heard that, that was the one thing I actually wanted. Like, wait, did he just lie to her? I was like, why not just tell? I was like, I guess maybe she would have. I think he should have told her. But, you know, this is the show where people lie to each other all the time, so whatever. So Diggle just joins the crowd, I guess. But he should have told her.
But I think it was a good, good way to showcase the actor that plays John, gave him some meteor stuff to deal with.
Cool. I wasn't so much weary in this episode, although there were just, like I said, one too many moments of should I kill him or not. It's like, yeah, well, once you do that more than once, like, okay, now I know what you're going to do, because you're doing the repetition of three, which is exactly what they did. So it was, for me, I looked at it as, oh, you just did a formula. It's like, not going to kill you, not going to kill you. Yeah, I'm going to kill you, which is what they did in the show. So I liked him killing him, but I was just like, enough already. Just I didn't like the brother character to begin with. I hated all the episodes of him just in the little glass cage. And when he mentioned for 3 months, like, yeah, it really felt like 3 months. So my annoyance about it is probably less about this specific episode. It's remembering all the other episodes and just wondering, how does he go to the bathroom? So does he let him shower? I don't know. We don't explain these things. So I'm kind of glad he's gone, and maybe he can go work on Bones again or something. Or did they kill his character off on that show too? I don't know. It's been a while since I've watched it. Was there anything else truly noteworthy? I mean, I did enjoy Damien Dark killing everybody, you know, that you know, from Hive, but you know, obviously we kind of saw that coming, so it wasn't really, you know, anything shocking by any stretch of the imagination. But I can't think of anything else that was really all that notable about this episode. But I feel like I could be forgetting something significant. Dan?
Dark and Oliver's fighting.
Oh my god. Yeah. Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah.
It was.
I know you guys have gotten a little weary of some of the fight scenes, but this wasn't like super drawn out, like a whole bunch of people just like roundhouse kicking each other. This is actually like, you know, intimate, surprising, and sweet. So
I like
it was a much better fight.
Let me be clear. When he's fighting Damian Dark, I've got no problem with it. I think there's a lot more thought put into that because there's also an element of performance there as well as stunt. I'm weary of the fighting numerous thugs crap because it's just the same old, and it goes on forever. And like I said, it reminds me of watching the old Batman TV show from the 1960s, which would have those same kind of scenes, except at least those are kind of fun, and these aren't. They're not fun anymore, and they go on forever. And especially when there's like a whole bunch of them, I mean, I'm glad we got rid of one of the heroes, so now there's a few less. But you know, they're like, oh, now I'm going to watch, you know, about 2.5 minutes of people kicking each other, and you know, it's, and the problem is when you've got a show, like I just finished watching season 2 of Daredevil, and you know, even on that show, because we've got some really beautifully choreographed fight scenes on that show, but guess what? Even becomes fatiguing on that show. By the time you get to the end of that season, you're going to get tired, unless you're so in love with that fucking show, you're probably going to get tired of watching them fight ninjas a million times over. And I was watching, like, oh, it's like Arrow and the fucking League of Assassins and everyone else he fucking fights. It's like, oh, enough of this. I'm just tired of it. It needs to either be done in a more original way or just done less, one or the other.
Agreed.
Yeah, I even got sick of him fighting ninjas constantly in the comics, so I can just imagine how it is on the screen.
Yeah. Alrighty then.
I do have one thing. Oh. There was a wonderful line in this episode when Damian Dark went into Hive. He goes, "I learned a lot of things in prison: religion, bundt cakes." That is the type of line that if anyone else delivers, I'm like, that's just why. He delivers it so well, though, it's so funny when he says it. And you almost believe he learned about bundt cakes in prison. Being Damian Dark is who he is. That's all I had to say.
No, that's – oh, since speaking of funny lines, I really felt like Felicity was really back in this episode, just being more of the way the character that I had always liked before instead of the dreary stuff we've gotten with her with all the Ollie crap. But the fact when they're having a conference, that little, you know, meeting around the table towards the end of the episode, where, oh no, everything's about to go wrong, and we're hearing about, you know, taking over the nuclear arsenals of the world and all this other stuff. But when someone mentions it's Genesis, she has to drop in a line about, no, Phil Collins said that. And I kept going, that's so funny because it's so ill-timed. It's like, what are you, Spider-Man or something? Why would you make a comment like that? And you just, you know, you could hear like the Price is Right loser horn when she, because everyone just stared at her. It's like, well, she should be like, I thought it was funny. But I did enjoy that because it's like, ah, that's the Felicity I remember. Nice. Cisco would have appreciated that line. All right, so I guess it's time to move on to the final of the three shows that we wanted to talk about here. We're going to have to go back to last week because we're always like a week behind with the show because blame it on the CW schedule and the fact that we do have lives of some sort. So obviously the show I'm talking about is Legends of Tomorrow. Now, unless I'm mistaken, only a few of us have seen this episode. Is that correct? Is it just Vicky and Cade and myself? Is that about right?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah, it's hard for me to want to watch it sometimes, so I'm a little behind, a couple behind. But I can tell you, I didn't like the scene where Kendra was really fucking annoying, so you're right about that.
Well, I got some stuff to say about Kendra this episode, and it's going to be like, oh, I liked her, and then I didn't like her. And that's kind of the way I felt about her in this episode. Actually, let's lead off talking about her.
I think all right, I'm going to go eat a bundt cake, so good night, everybody.
All right, good night, Dan.
Good night, Dan.
So, for me personally, and I know I've been kind of beating up on Kendra, maybe I shouldn't phrase it that way, but you know what I mean. Verbally abuse, no, maybe I shouldn't say that either. I haven't been thrilled with the character of Kendra on this show for the most part since day one. But I don't want to just keep saying the same thing podcast after podcast, because that becomes just as repetitious and annoying to hear as some of the scenes can be on shows like this. So I'm going to say that I actually liked her for most of this episode. Can you guess the point where I stopped liking her in this episode?
I'd like to take a gamble on this, Scott.
Okay, go ahead.
Is it the part where she didn't fucking kill Vandal Savage?
Yes.
Yeah.
What the...
Go ahead, Kurt. People have been dropping F-bombs this whole fucking, this whole podcast.
I literally did, what the fuck are you doing? Kill him. You have him in the spot. He is his weakest you've ever had him. End it.
Vicky, I know you won't curse. But did you have a similar feeling, or are you going to cut her slack the way you sometimes like to, Ina? Because you're good friends with her.
No. Oh, no. It did annoy me. That's all I'm going to say.
Vicky, if you don't swear here, Vandal Savage wins, so just let it out. Come on.
It didn't fucking make any sense. That's what made me so angry about it. Because, okay, this is Carter Hall in the year 2166, so he's just one of any number of reincarnations that happens, I don't know, every probably 40 or 50 years, because he usually gets killed in his prime, generally speaking, I'm guessing. Who the fuck cares if he's brainwashed? Big deal. That's not your Carter. You're not sticking around in 2166. So right off the bat, I'm like, okay, this is a stupid situation. Secondly, you're traveling with some of the greatest scientific minds around. You don't think maybe they could figure out a way to help him or do something, if that's your concern? Really?
Yeah.
Either way, I mean, it doesn't make sense. It pissed me off because it's like, argh. I mean, yes, I do like the idea that they've got Vandal Savage, you know, in this kind of this, yet again, someone's being kept prisoner in a glass cage on all these shows. That's what Berlanti CW shows do, apparently, and CBS shows. I was like, oh, I was actually kind of liking you in this episode. I liked your scenes, and then the Carter stuff just ruined it, and then the stupid scene with Ray, and then it ruined it, and I was like, oh, I'm back to not liking you all over again. I was very disappointed by that.
It was one of the worst ways to go, oh, we don't want to kill him now. That was the worst way of doing it, because you're right. It just doesn't make sense. She shouldn't care about this future version of Carter at all, because you're not going to live with him.
I can't believe I'm going to do this. I will say, sort of in her defense, because I can, you know, I can switch sides, because that's what I do. In a weird way, it reminds me of Barry on The Flash and how he probably shouldn't give a damn about certain things on Earth 2, but you can't help it because you've got that emotional attachment. So when you see, you know, even if it's a different version of a Joe West or an Iris or whoever, you're still going to care. You're still going to want to do something. I think part of my problem has always been I've never believed that she should care about this person, and I know her memories came back and the love and that... For some reason, that plays really well in the comic books, but it plays really badly on this show. And maybe they just didn't do it well. Well, that's probably why. This was a pretty good episode, I thought.
But yeah, it was.
That part, I hated that part so much.
Well, here's another problem with it. You have thousands of years of history with Vandal Savage. You know him better than... Yet you believe he's gonna fix him if you don't kill him?
Yeah.
Your mind actually goes, oh, I believe... No, of all the people go, no, I don't believe that at all. I'm going to destroy you. But it removes all of this. I know it's for the very reason you would understand why she loves Carter and would do what she's doing would be the exact reason she should stop Savage, because she should know what he's going to do, that this is never going to work.
By the way, I have a question about this whole about this plot line that's been here from the get-go about Vandal Savage and the Hawks. And the whole thing is what's helped him remain immortal, I guess, for whatever, the magical, mystical crap that happened thousands of years ago, was slaying one or both of them, essentially, right?
Right.
So, in this year, 2166, is there a reason why he would keep Carter Hall alive? Even brainwashed, whatever? Wouldn't he, once he had found him and knows who he is, wouldn't he kill him? Or does he have to know who he is first? Or does he have to hook up with Shayera first? Or I was never clear on that. So I kept wondering, well, why is Carter Hall even alive? Why would Savage have him? I don't understand it. Am I missing something?
I think it is part of them two making a connection. Because I think that was kind of a... I think they might have established that in the Flash Arrow crossover where those two do meet up. And that's when he starts to come after them.
Okay, all
right. But then again, there might not be, that might not even, I'm not even saying that is the case, but I think that was established that it's when those two meet up again in their current lifestyles, that's when whatever triggers, and he realizes they're out there and can hunt them. So I think that's why.
But he already has him, so why wouldn't he kill him? Why wouldn't he do all the stuff with his blood and all the other crap like he's done, 200-something other times before? That's the thing that kind of confused me.
Inconsistent writing?
Okay, that's actually a good reason for it. let's talk about some of the more fun stuff in this episode. Let me get one super geeky thing out of the way right now, and it's kind of a now Jason didn't see this episode, so it's kind of a shame because he'd probably want to weigh in here. So tough luck, Jason. So
what did I miss? What did I miss?
Pull it, Dan. One of the things that happens in this episode is they're pursued by this giant robot that's referred to as Leviathan on it. That's hence the title of the episode, I guess. Now, someone pointed this out to me. Actually, someone we used to know on the message boards of a geeky place we used to hang out years ago called Critical Mass, whatever. A guy, Jeremy, Ciccone or Ciccone, whatever his last name is. I screwed up. Sorry, Jeremy. But he used to be Hyperion on the old message boards. He actually contacted me wondering if I had seen the episode and whether I thought that robot was actually them dropping a reference to a Shazam character. And then I was looking at the robot, and then I was looking at the character he's talking about, like, oh my god, he might be onto something here.
So, I had to go look it up, and yeah, it really does.
So to clarify for everyone listening who has no idea what I'm talking about, Captain Marvel, aka Shazam, has a huge roster of really crazy wild villains. You know, everything from a little inchworm to Black Adam to whoever. But one of his villains is a character named Mr. Adam. A lot of his villains tend to have Mr. or Doctor in their name, I've noticed. Anyway, who's essentially like this big-ass robot that he fights, who's got the big atomic symbol and everything. And if you're watching the Leviathan, he's also got the atomic symbol, whatever. Now, I know that that's the explanation for that is supposed to be it's Ray Palmer's tech, and they've gone to this. Now, it's not just small, regular-sized outfits. Now, it's this giant version of what Ray did. So it's all Ray's fault, apparently. But I gotta think they're also making a Mr. Adam reference. I mean, it's gotta be. It's gotta be, right?
The look of it seems too similar to how Mr. Adam looks to not be some kind of reference to it. The color scheme it has is very reminiscent of it. It seems to be the right thing.
And one of the reasons I wanted to mention the fellow who pointed it out to me is like, you know what? I even went online, and you know how whenever any of these shows, The Flash, Arrow, or Legends of Tomorrow, or Supergirl, I guess, whenever they air, there's always like an article on like either comicbook.com or one of the other things where here's the Easter eggs you might have missed in the episode, right? I didn't come across any that mentioned Mr. Adam yet. And I was like, oh, you found one that the dorks on these websites haven't found yet. I mean, maybe now it is somewhere, but I that night when he told me, I was like, I couldn't find it. But I really thought that was kind of an amusing little thing. But I actually enjoyed the whole Ray, becoming, Giant Man, essentially. But we talk about the Atom and the Ant-Man being similar. I was like, hey, guess what? Now he gets to be Giant Man also. But I really got a kick out of it. It had a very kind of a low-budget Pacific Rim kind of feel to it, I thought.
Yeah, the fight scene was nice to see.
Vicky, go ahead.
No, when my sister's like, they made a Jaeger!
See that, but now I needed like some gigantic dinosaur-like thing for them to be fighting too. That would have been awesome. But I really liked the way that was done. I mean, I could see. It didn't bother me that you could tell it was the amount of CGI that went into it because, well, how else are they going to do it anyway? But I really kind of enjoyed that, so I got a big kick out of that. What else do we have going on in this episode? Anything that comes to mind, Vicky? Since I feel like I've been talking over you too much tonight. Anything that stood out for you in this episode?
The Snart plot with basically showing Cassie what a monster her dad was pretty interesting.
Excellent. That was probably one of the best parts of the whole episode was the situation with her, I thought.
Can someone fill that in? Because my channel decided to glitch out and show me a commercial, so I missed that part where he talks to her about that. He goes to talk, and then I'm like, it's Mick and Kendra talking. I'm like, what happened? Where did it go? Why did I lose that? So I have no idea what they actually happened there. I just know later on she talks about knowing what a monster her father is, but I'm like, I don't know when you got that information.
Oh, you missed the reveal. Okay. Well, as you know, he's during the course of the episode, he has these conversations with her, and she thinks, he's going to torture her. Like, no, he just wants to talk to her, and to convince her that, her dad's a scumbag of what he did. Because she's blaming everything on Perdegaton, releasing that virus that killed everyone, including her mother, apparently. So Snart gets Gideon to call up footage from that meeting that we saw in that previous episode where it's clear that Vandal Savage is the one saying, to basically release the virus and, thin the herds, I think he says in the scene. So she actually sees her father giving the orders to do it. And that's how she knows, point blank, dad's a big liar. And a monster and a killer and everything else.
Thank you, because I figured she'd learn that because she mentions it, but I didn't actually get to see that. So thank you.
Yeah, that wasn't that pretty much it, Vicky? There wasn't. I mean, once she saw the footage, I think that pretty much cinched it. There wasn't anything else beyond that. That had to be it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was pretty much it.
I really did like that actress. I liked her. I was kind of like, oh, I wouldn't mind seeing more of her instead of some of these other characters, quite frankly. But overall, I kind of enjoyed the episode. I mean, and which is hard for me to say because I've grown. Talk about growing weary of something. I'm super weary of the Vandal Savage storyline and whatever. And minus the horrible, stupid, dumb thing with Kendra and Carter and, oh, God, him again, really? Subtract that from the episode. I really like this one, actually.
Yeah, I this was a really good episode. There were great moments. The moment where Savage thinks he has him and the team shows up and there's that shot of all the team together when his daughter turns in. I enjoyed it because I've really come to love Mick 2.0, as I've called him, catching up. They took a character who was really bad at the beginning of the season and through that story gave us a wonderful character. And the scene where they're all listening to Vandal Savage give speeches and they look over and Mick's like, he gives a good speech. You're like, okay, Mick is the biggest asshole on the team now.
I love when he did that. That was one of my favorite parts.
It was a great part, and this Mick can deliver that line. You would never believe the original version of Mick would deliver that, but he has a way to deliver lines now and his personality in this version that makes him work so much better on that team. Wow, I just blanked on what I was going to say next.
Well done.
But no, this was like, I have to say, this is one of the better episodes the show has done. Everything besides that little bit at the end really worked.
What's really intriguing me right now... Oh, I'm sorry, Vicky. Go on.
My only big problem with the episode, and you guys kind of touched on this earlier when you're talking about, plot, you know, works when it wants to. Okay, Stein is injured by the shrapnel or whatever. If they established in an early episode, you know, like what happens to one happens to the other, why was Jax okay?
Oh, they established that physical issue.
Wow, yeah, they did.
I gotta be honest with you, I don't even remember Jax in this episode at all.
He hooked
Ray up. He's the one who boosted Ray.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then was basically monitoring him while he was fighting the Leviathan. That was pretty much all he did this episode.
Yeah, well. Oh well. It's one of those issues about this show. It's just, you're always going to have certain people like, that's all you're going to get to do in this episode. Yay, but you're still going to get the same paycheck, so good for you. At least I hope they are. But
Sarah didn't really do a whole lot in the episode either, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I guess some of the problems when you get these huge storylines, the characters that, unless you're zipping around with powers. Although, that's not even true now that I think about it. Forget that. I don't remember. It's been a while since I've watched the episode, obviously. But Sarah, she doesn't really do much in this episode either, does she?
She joins them on the original mission to the Vandal speech.
She didn't really have, like, a big part in the episode. Like, she accompanied people places, and she was supposed to, like, train Kendra or whatever to kill with a piece of jewelry.
Oh yeah, and then melting down the thing, which I kind of like that because
and
she got
like,
a mace.
You know, that she's it's like, how am I supposed to do this? That's a good question. That was a rhetorical question,
right?
That was kind of
Well, here's the thing: if the problem is always going to be, and it's not their fault, but if everyone's pretty much focused on only one or two things in the episode, then you can only give so many people so much to do.
Oh yeah.
So if you're not separating, like if you're not doing the thing where everyone, you know, you break it off into little groups of two or three where they all have different little missions, then you're going to get Stein. Well, what are we going to do with Marty Stein? We're just going to put him in sick bay. And Jax is just going to be, I'll just be Mr. Mechanic guy and help Ray, which is, yeah, great. Driving Mr. Adam or something. Wait, Mr. Adam. Anyway, I'm trying not to see. Now you got me looking at all the negative things about the episode.
No,
it's all your fault.
Turn it around, Scott. Let's turn it around.
The thing with Stein was my one problem really with the episode. I didn't have a problem with the other people having smaller parts because that's something that's bound to happen when you have bigger casts like this. So
or lesser writers. I'm sorry. It's just I hate that excuse for some shows because I watch a lot of shows and have a lot of characters and I don't have this issue with them. So, that's just the way it is. But anyway, getting back, I did like the episode a lot, even though right now it sounds like I don't. I blame Vicky for that. And no, I'm just kidding. I'm treating it the way Dan does actually now. Yay! The other thing that's interesting about this episode, it feels like the next episode should be like the finale, and there's three more episodes. So I'm very intrigued to what they're going to do here. I mean, is it a four-part finale?
I'm gonna guarantee we'll see some stretching going on in these next few episodes. There's no way they can't.
I guess, but you know what? Maybe they're just gonna do something just totally out of left field that we're not expecting. Maybe 1990 Flash shows up here. No, just kidding.
Well, it's possible they could, since if Savage is not the villain, we could end up having the finale not like have a cliffhanger to Savage. You could have a final episode where you think everything's breaking apart, but...
Oh, I don't think they're going to have a cliffhanger with Savage. I don't think that's...
No, I think he ends the season.
No, I think the thing I said in the news earlier, I thought pretty much cinched it. Yeah, Vandal Savage, that ends the season. Which, I mean, at least that's how I'm choosing to interpret it, which makes me look forward to season two. But I haven't seen tonight's episode yet, and I don't think any of us have, if I'm mistaken.
Nope, so, I didn't watch it.
Looking forward to checking that out. All right, I think can I say that we're done? Because I feel like we're done. We're done, right? We're done.
I think we're done. We're done.
Good. Mm-hmm. Good Lord. All right.
Pretty much done.
If we had been, maybe I spent too much time on the news because I would have yapped about my opinions and negativity about Daredevil season two, but I'll save that for another time. I just want to, you know, stick the finger up to people who actually are big fans of the show, I guess. But if you like to talk about shows like that or anything we actually talk about on this podcast, you can do it on our Facebook page. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast Facebook page. Just type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You'll find our page. Like it. Join it. Join the conversation. You can find us on iTunes the very same way, Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. Oh my gosh, we actually got another rating. For the first time in, I don't know, like 3 or 4 months, someone, you know, we got another 5-star rating. So whoever that was, thank you for someone listening to my whining for the last few. You guys didn't hear me because you, Vicky, Mike, see, I know you watched The Good Wife, so you might actually listen to that special Good Wife podcast I did earlier this week. But
yeah, I'll probably listen to it.
I bitched something awful at the end of it about the rating and review thing, you know, which I kept going, thinking, I just might have gotten us a 0 rating for that one. Someone's going to get annoyed with me, but hopefully that won't happen. And finally, you can also follow us on Twitter at STVD Podcast is the handle there. STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You know what we do on Twitter. I don't need to tell you. And that's about it. I'm glad that we were all able to get together and at least, you know, for a while, we were all together. I don't know if Dan's still lurking or if he's actually, I think he is gone for a change. But I just want to say thank you to you guys as always. And I'm betting next time we talk, we'll have all seen Civil War. I don't think we're going to devote a podcast to it because I don't think we have the time. You know, I'd love to say at the end, okay, 5 minutes on Civil War, go! But I don't think that's possible. I think it'll be like 500 minutes on Civil War. So, but I think we all, even the non-Marvel guy here is fucking looking forward to it. It really looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm dying. I actually want to see Spider-Man. I can't believe I'm saying that out loud, considering how tired I should be of him. Like everything I've read, I'm like, ooh, this sounds like a really good Spider-Man. I really want to see this. So anyway, with all that said, I will say goodnight to all of you, and goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.
Goodnight, everybody.
Goodnight.
Wait a minute.
Is episode 126, because he forgot it, and I knew he was. I was waiting for him not to do it. So this is episode 126, everybody.
Tisk, tisk, Jason. Tisk, tisk.
I had one job, and I blew it.
He's the monarch of motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of whizzle, yes indeed. Go from here to China in a no time flat, beat the speed of light and you can't beat that. Mighty
Flash,
in a fight he'll smash and crash, smash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy, thief or robber, the world's fastest human, yeah man, the Flash,
the unbeatable Flash, the unbeatable Flash.
His real name, works with the police, justice is his aim, wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it. When danger threatens, he'll switch in a minute. The Flash,
the Flash, the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash,
the Flash, the Flash,
in a fight he'll smash.